Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today we are going to be playing the second part of my interview with Roxanne Meadows, who is a co-founder of the Venus Project. And I got to tell you, since we played the first version or the first part of this interview, we've had a lot of comments on YouTube and other places. And people, there's a lot that are really receptive and like the ideas. And there's others that feel that it's communism repackaged. And one of the things that she is very adamant, and same with Jacques Fresco, who was the original founder of the Venus Project, who has unfortunately passed away recently, they are adamant that it is not communism, it's not socialism, it's not capitalism, and that in order to understand what this is, you have to unlearn to relearn, and it's a paradigm shift. So I got to tell you, I need to learn more to be able to see it not as repackaged socialism or communism or something like that. But that's just because I need to learn more. I need to understand. Just because it's a social type of arrangement, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's socialism. Or just because there isn't money doesn't mean it's communism. Obviously, communism and socialism use money, or at least the versions that have been implemented throughout the world. So what is this? What is an environment where it doesn't use money? I just say, let's have an open mind here and let's learn about something that's completely different, has a different paradigm. And if you really want to understand anything better, you have to take the time to learn about it. Because if we don't do that and we shut out ideas without giving it time to actually understand the ideas, then we'll just make even a more polarizing world. Right now, we're at a point where no one listens to things that are outside of their box. They only want to listen to things that are exactly what they believe. And if that's all you do, we'll just have a completely polarizing world and we're not going to get along on anything. So it's important that, from what I do, I think it's important to bring people from all different walks of life and come up and show paradigm-changing ideas. I mean, that's the whole point of this show, is disruption, innovation, game-changing things that get people out of their box and thinking differently, different paradigms. Not that things should be made up or just randomly, you know, thrown at you. Things that I bring on my show need to have realistic backing behind what they're doing. And in this case, you know, people can argue that there isn't a realistic backing because this would never be allowed to happen. But that's not the point. The point on something like this, is there elements that we can understand? Is there a way that we can bring the really good stuff that they're coming up with and actually implement some of these things? I don't know. But you won't know if you don't give it a chance to try to understand it. And I'm the first one to say I need to understand it more before I give it my opinion. But I love the fact that somebody's going out there and trying to solve real problems that we have and looking at things from different perspectives, because that's what we have to do, because a lot of the stuff we have going on right now is not working. So let's get back into that interview now with Roxanne Meadows.
We're not equal. They tell people we're equal, but you're not equal without equal purchasing power. And you're as free as your purchasing power in this culture. Laws are enacted that are written by corporations and handed to politicians and put out there word for word, not to serve our interests, but to serve those corporations who write the laws. Goods and are often destroyed just to keep prices up. In this system, all you are, and you're not even embarrassed about it, is a consumer. You have to keep consuming in this system to keep it going. And that's a real problem with technology displacing people. So essentially, we're plundering the planet for resources just to make things we don't need, and we make things to wear out and break down, which is called planned obsolescence, which most of you probably know about.
But which I am tired of needing to buy a refrigerator or a washer and dryer because they planned that.
Absolutely. Everything is like that. So the scientists really become prostitutes in this system because they're taught well, but they have to go back into the laboratory and make things wear out and break down, usually after the warranty is out. This is deliberate. And another thing is that war is one of our biggest businesses. I don't even have words to say how disgusting it is. So in this system, we have limitless consumption, exploitation, and expansion because of the capitalistic monetary system. When the bottom line is profit and the main aim is wealth, property, and power, you're going to see all the problems that we have today.
Well, it boils down to the values that we have perpetuates the people in power.
That's it, in a nutshell.
And this is everything that we're describing. Well, here's a good example. A small group of bankers own 43% of all assets that are traded, and they pull down 60% of all annual earnings. That's a crazy number. And I don't think people realize that such a small group of people have so much control. And that is also, our media is consolidated into 5 media companies, which only 118 directors sit on boards. So essentially, 118 people control all of our media. And I would say even those boards aren't even, those 118 people, a lot of them are just placed if they will just follow along with what a few want you to do.
And the people on those boards are also on other large corporation boards. So it's all intertwined. And, you know, it's come to today where 5 of the wealthiest people own half the amount of wealth as half the population in the world. And people say that the system is broken. The system is doing exactly what it's supposed to do, and it can't be fixed. A new system has to be presented, and this is what's needed.
Well, how do these people also control our government, you know, our democracy, which people say we don't even really live in a democracy or a representative, you know, a republic anymore? But how do they control that?
I would say we never did live in a democracy. In fact, you know, Marx used to say that religion was the opiate of the masses. I seem to think that this word democracy is so abused and so misused. Did anybody ever come to you and ask you to vote for the perpetual wars that we have?
Well, I think this shows when they put the vote out on whether people wanted to go to war in Syria, it was like 96% of the people said no.
But they don't have any.
It didn't matter. We still went to war in Syria. But that shows you how many people do not want to go, yet we're still doing it.
And do they ask you when they want to make a new nuclear power plant? Or do they ask you when they're going to frack under your land that you're supposed to own, but they own the rights underneath the land, so they pollute your water and your land and your air? So public doesn't really have much of a say of anything, so I don't know why they bandy around this word democracy. But, you know, getting back to your question, also in 2016, industry, not the general public or the people, because they really don't have the money to do this, but they spent over $3.15 billion lobbying the politicians. But today they don't even have to do that in the president's offices. They put industry into office. You can bypass that now. They have taken over. They are controlling things and dismantling whatever they want. And, you know, the money is going from the poor and the middle class to the wealthy faster than any other time in history. So
I don't mind certain people, you know, a broad spectrum of people going into office. There should be people from that sector being in there. The problem is we don't get people from the other areas and get a good, it's just certain corporations. And the other thing is smaller companies are being shut out, or they're buying things that are, and a company will come up with a solution that's great for society. The people, you know, it's what our country supposedly is about. An entrepreneur does something, they're probably going to become wealthy, and they're disruptive to the whole industry, but it's really good for everybody. A large company swoops and buys it, shelves it, and then shuts it down.
Yes.
And
true.
even if they threaten them behind the scenes, knowing that they're going to, you either let us buy it or you're going nowhere anyways.
They, you know, industries, especially, like, I'll give you the example of the oil industry, they put billions into new rigs and searching for oil and bringing it up and distributions and pipelines and everything else. And they don't want anything to disrupt that. They have a long-term investment that they have to get their money back. They have stockholders and everything else. You can't afford to be ethical in this system. You know, if you came up with a food that cleans your teeth better than the toothbrush, the people who make toothbrushes are not going to step aside and say, take it away. This is a much better product. It'll really help people. They put out false claims and false advertisements because they're invested in the culture. They too have to send their kids through schools. They have wives that want clothing and they want different clothing and cars. And, you know, the more you have, the more you have to keep up with other people who have more. So it's a perpetual rat race.
So it's easier to disrupt the smaller areas.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible. I'm not going to say impossible because I know there's a glimpse of possibility here. But it's very difficult to disrupt the big entrenched players. And some of those players really need to be disrupted, because changing our energy system, when we have so many better solutions, it will be so much better for mankind. Now, we could do it and phase it in so it just doesn't completely disrupt. And things are going to be phased in anyways. It's just we have to figure out a way for them not to hold us back and keep us from evolving as man, you know, as a species.
You can't do it in this system. We feel you cannot do it in this system. This is the system that created those processes. So this is the evolution of the monetary or the free enterprise or the capitalistic system. This is it. There is no making it ethical, making it better. It's at its last stages, and its last stages are going to get very ugly. You can't enact laws to override the aspects in society that do not work. You can't slap a law on it and make it work. You can't appeal to people's ethics, because that doesn't work when the society is reinforcing them in so many other ways to do something that is not good for society or people. So the system is dying. We have an established system which holds people back from really producing, manufacturing, and making better products in many ways, and living a more fulfilling lifestyle. It keeps people slaves to the monetary system. You know, in the old days, you used to have slaves, and they used to take care of them and give them food and give them housing. And this is we still have slaves all over the world, but they're paid slavery. When you go into a corporation, it's a dictatorship. You know, they're always talking against dictatorships, but that's a dictatorship. You don't go into the corporation and say, well, what would you like to do? They tell you what you're going to do to serve that corporation. I'm not saying whether it's good or bad or right or wrong, but that is the situation. When you get out, there's no left turn. Don't park here. So it is a dictatorship. But we really need an entirely different system to take care of what you're upset about, because this system does not serve people.
Let's talk about a few more things about the system, and then I want to talk about some of your solutions to solving it. Banks pretty much do whatever they want, and then they just pay fines. It's like a do whatever you want and then a fine system. How do we get to that point? And, you know, isn't that pretty much what it is?
Well, banks really run the system. you know, there's so many fallacies of what we think banks do, but they make their own rules. And when we had the mortgage crisis in 2008, they gave trillions back to the bankers, which still got benefits by the millions. And they could have given it back to the people that could pay the banks off, and which would keep the system going. But they didn't, because they don't care about people. It's obvious they wouldn't outsource if they cared about people. So trying to plead for ethics in this system is a hopeless cause. It is the system itself that, with the bankers on the top, that are running the show. And as I said, they're not running it for your interests. They're running it for their interests. All aspects of the banking situation, you know, they might slap a little fine, but it doesn't compare to what the banks made with their criminal behavior compared to the fine that they have to pay. So there is no fixing it. It has to be totally changed.
Well, you also talk about prisons being used as a way of social control. I know we have a mass incarceration problem. I've covered that in a number of shows. But how are they using it for social control?
Well, just one explanation. You know, blacks are imprisoned overwhelmingly more than whites. Blacks don't have the education system if you're in a poor black, and which most of them live in that area, and they are of no use to the corporations as it is. They contribute very little to the corporations, but they are a use if they imprison them. They get, well, juveniles, they get $116,000 a year. For adults, they get between $30,000 and $40,000 a year, so they're much more profitable to them if they incarcerate them. And if you incarcerate people with trumped-up charges, for those who are what they call social activists or agitators, if they promote something different or they point out very often the problems of society, many of them are imprisoned, if not killed. And this is a good way to keep down revolution, the prison system.
Well, the other thing you talk about is scarcity. You say that scarcity is another way to control society, and you think it's done on purpose. I think there's a lot of mindlessness, you know, like the scientists only learning their thing and then not knowing the whole world. And so I think 90% of the people just see their own sliver, and so they go along with it. Maybe 98% of the people. Do you think that the other small percent are doing things on purpose?
Well, maybe in some aspects when they realize. But I agree. It's the control is so ingrained that we don't even know we're being controlled. Maybe somebody will point out one aspect or another, but they don't understand just whose interest their value system, which means how they think and how they behave, they don't know whose interest the way they think serves.
So it's a byproduct of the interest that you're serving. People they're not purposely going out to just hurt people. They're going out because the system is set up that they're going to promote their interests. And as a byproduct of that, that hurts all these people.
They don't care about it. They can't afford to care about it. And you're given a different education in this culture. There's two-tiered education. One tier is you're going to school and you react to bells and you become subservient, you react to times. And the other, for the working class, and the other educational tier is the Harvards and the Yales. And they're given a value system that they're in a position, they were born to be able to lead where the others can't. And the books that they read reinforce that bigotry and prejudice. And so, you know, it's all self-serving, and it becomes very tight after a while. And I did know, you know, that people, certain industrialists might know in certain areas what they're doing, but like I said, can't afford to be ethical or turn the other cheek. But I did know an industrialist that said he grapples with figuring out just how much money to give his employees, and he had a lot of employees. He was a debt collector, and because at a certain point, they won't come back to work. So he had to keep a minimum type of, although he made a tremendous amount, he did not give his employees very much, so they have to keep coming back to work to pay off their debts.
Because if he gave them too much, they would just quit their jobs? That was his thought?
Yes, go out on vacations. You know, if you paid them any type of equivalent to what the owners get, you know, a small portion of that, but still a good standard of living, they probably wouldn't come back to work.
You have a video that's in your documentary that I want to play of Smedley Butler. He was a soldier in the war, and he really thought deeply about what he was doing. So I want to play that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, he was one of the most decorated Marines after World War I, and he said that he was a gangster for capitalism, essentially. He realized once he wrote a book, War is a Racket, and it was very outspoken after he got out of the military. And of course, they tried to shut him up. But he really exposed what the military was about, how they just went into different countries, not to bring democracy, otherwise we'd have democracy all over the world, but to secure resources and cheap labor or pipelines. Excuse me. So he really exposed what he did in different countries, and I think that clip will show it. And his final conclusion was that you can't stop this onslaught of war because there's so much money to be made in it. And what they do is they have factories that make military munitions and armaments and services to the servicemen. They have factories in every different state, which means the politicians don't want to talk against the military because they would eliminate too many jobs. So, you know, even Sanders didn't talk about the military. So he came to the conclusion that you can't get rid of this through parleys in Geneva or peace conferences. The only way you can get rid of it is taking the money out of war. And we think we expand that to everything. The only way you can get rid of the detrimental problems, the detrimental behavior, the polluting of the earth, our water, our air, our food, is to take the money out of the scenario.
But how do you do that? How do you take the money out of the scenario and make this all work? So what is your... How do you break all this down and replace it with something else that people will be able to embrace and understand?
Well, first of all, we don't advocate, you know, throwing bombs at banks or capitalists. It's not really essentially a fight against us and them. It's a fight against the system, the structure of the system itself that needs to be changed. Because quite often when people are deprived and then they become into power, they're just as corrupt as the rest of them. And I would give the example of what's happening to Israel in terms of how much abuse they had. They become abusers. It's well known that children who are abused become abusers as well. So...
Well, they get to the point where they think that's the only way that they can maintain their power or control is to abuse others so that they can be in power.
It's because they know of nothing else. And as I mentioned, you can't exceed your environment. You can't think past what the environment gives you. It's a sad thing, but the main thing is you have to educate people to what's going on in society, but mostly what the alternative is, what you can have, because a lot of liberals complain about society, but they offer no solutions. So you just make people more frustrated. You dump the problems on their laps with no way out, And it makes it harder for people. So unless you replace it with a viable working alternative, is what we do at the Venus Project, then you really go nowhere. You make people more depressed. We get hundreds of letters saying that the Venus Project gives people hope. They see how we can use science and technology for the betterment of people today within an alternative social design, which we'll go into when you want to.
Well, yeah, let's go into that now, because that's, you know, we've kind of addressed most of the problems, although there's lots more, but you've addressed the source of it pretty much. So if you can dive into more how we solve these problems and your research, that's what you're looking at. And we're not talking about socialism or communism or capitalism. It's a different concept altogether.
Right. We're updating our social design based on our new technologies and our new findings. You know, we live the lives of our parents and our great-grandparents with the values that we have. The system is the same of competition and scarcity and money-oriented. But we're advocating something very different. Going back to the old system for a moment, but we feel that competition and scarcity limit progress. But the Venus Project would make all goods and services available to everyone without money, barter, credit, servitude, or trade of any kind. With our technology, if we used our technology wisely, as we advocate, then we could produce, and we gear it toward producing abundance, we could have a fantastic lifestyle. We call it a global resource-based economy, where the aim is creating abundance as quickly as possible with the efficient distribution and production of goods and services that are available to everyone. And we can do this today if we direct science and technology in that way.
How do we deal with certain aspects of society that few want to do that? And then there's certain aspects of society that more, you know, a lot of people want to do. How do we balance those kinds of things out?
Well, I think in education too, but we want to automate remedial jobs as quickly as possible so people don't have to do those types of jobs. You know, many years ago in France, I think it was, nobody wants to clean the toilets. They had automatic toilets in the streets, where you go in, you'd use it, you'd come out, it would flush the whole thing down, sanitize it, and be ready for the next person. You can do that all over. You don't need people cleaning the toilets or the bathrooms. But we put scientists on making a better bomb or making a better industrial facility that would outstrip their competitors, or making drones and making oil polluting systems, or, you know, perpetuating what we have but making a better widget for it. And we don't put scientists, we've never given them the problem of how to design a society without booms and busts, with clean sources of energy, where only nutritious food can be grown and served. How do you make cities that are clean and safe? And how do you make safe industrial plants? How do you conserve resources? And much more, but we've never given scientists that problem. We give scientists problems to perpetuate this detrimental, terrible system, insidious system. So that's what's lacking.
Do you have any cities around the world that are framing their whole setup after the Venus Project?
No, they couldn't, because they're entrenched in the monetary system. What we're advocating is to the Venus Project demonstrates in models and drawings and animations and blueprints a totally new design, from industrial plants to medical care to food to energy to entire city designs. And we are always, if you look at the phases on our website, thevenusproject.com, and And I will talk about our next phase to you. We haven't announced it yet anywhere. We're just putting it up on our website soon. But one of the phases that we're working toward to be able to do a first city, to demonstrate the things that we talk about technically and the values. So right now we give courses, we do books, we do videos to show where we need to go and to introduce this new value system.
So it's pretty much an educational facility and showing people what's possible and how we could operate and how to think differently about how we operate with each other. And your second phase is to actually go a step farther and create one and be able to show people physically. Can they go live there for a little bit, or how is that going to work?
Well, we are changing our phases right now. We are working right now on a larger research center. A lot of people come here and they want to stay in some of Jacques' houses. We only have 3 residents here. We were restricted with zoning laws. And they want to come and spend more time learning more about this system and having seminars, 2 and 3 or 4 day seminars. What we are working on right now, and we have a call out for different professionals for different phases of developing this. And many are volunteering. In fact, everything we do are through volunteers, through people. They understand if they don't work toward this, it is not going to happen. If you do nothing, nothing will happen. You can be assured of that. So what we are just developing from, I mentioned Jacques briefly. I'd like to get into him more so as we go along, but who really arrived at this system. And Jacques and I, in 1980, came up with the Venus Project as we moved to Venus, Florida. But what we are promoting next is a center for resource management to work on problems for immediate scarcity-oriented problems that we have today and on plans for the future, 2-year plans, 3-year plans, into developing, and it's all geared toward developing, taking the next step to develop a first city. If we had the funds, we would probably do a first city, but we don't, so we're taking it further than what we have now. We are going to have what we call a museum of the future. We have over 400 models here to show what the future could be like. We were invited to Dubai once, and we gave them a proposal, and we were doing bids on a museum of the future, a city of the future, and a research and development area. And we're kind of going to be doing that in our next phase. We're making this facility a round facility because it's much more efficient how it's laid out. And 1/8 of the facility is dedicated toward a museum of the future. But you would go through and see technology and see the state of the art today. You would learn things as you go along. And then the last building, you would see how it could all be combined toward a sustainable direction, toward a resource-based economy, and how that would be many years into the future. So we're going to have that as an entertaining and a educational facility. We will have a 1/8 of the circular design for a tourist area where they can stay for many days. And then we would be having educational facilities within the rest of the area where we would have a large area devoted toward a learning center and courses. And then we would have a media center to put out books and videos and different media, movies, television series about this direction, because it is mostly an educational process to introduce people to other ways of thinking so they can put this together. It's so contrary to the way that you're taught to think today that it takes a while to put the pieces together. So this is something that we're working on now. We will have sections for research and development. And it's not like you can just do a city or convert a city. We don't feel that you can take existing cities and convert them to a city that would represent a resource-based economy. We would be living between systems originally, because we do need money to do this. But we would use money to to go beyond money, to surpass the system, or help introduce how to surpass it and show an example of it. So
this is going to be built in Venus, Florida, or also in Dubai?
No. The project in Dubai did not go through.
Okay.
But I was using that as an example for what we were doing there. We're doing a smaller scale. We're planning for a smaller scale. It can be done anywhere in the world. We're not sure where it will be done yet. It would be about 400 acres. I laid out the design scheme using in the last 41 years, Jacques did over 5,500 designs and sketches of buildings, cities, planes, energy systems, medical systems, and much more. And I took from those drawings and I arranged a layout, because I was in that business as well, and I worked with Jacques for many years as well doing this. I arranged a layout for the next phase that we are going to be working toward, that we are working toward now. We're working on a business proposal right now, and we're working on getting people together who can help us do the drawings and the final blueprints for that.
Can you talk about the founder? You're a co-founder. Can you talk about how this whole thing started?
Great, I'd love to. Yeah. Well, let me mention Jacques Fresco founded this. I'll go back to when he was raised. In fact, he just died a few months ago, and he was 101, and he worked to the very end toward this. But when he was very young, around 13 or so, he experienced the Great Depression in New York City. And the story he always told was that they were good people that were put out of their homes. They lived in the streets in tents. They wouldn't do that this time as cooperatively as they did in the past and as quiet as they did in the past. People have too many things, and they have too many guns now in the United States, and they're spoiled in a lot of ways. But getting back to Jacques, at that time, they did live in the streets, and they were fed by bread lines. They wanted to work. These were people who were technical. There were things in store windows. The goods and services were there to be made. They were industrial plants, but they were not being used. They were shut down. There was arable land to grow, but the farmers were not growing. And it was all because they didn't have money in their pockets. So Jacques, at an early age, different than most kids, at an early age, he realized it was the rules of the game that we played by that were so screwed up, that caused so much unnecessary suffering, that he felt he wanted to devote his life toward finding a different social system that would work. And at that time, because things were so bad, people were standing on literally soapboxes and talking about different systems. So he would go up to these people when he was very young and listen to them talking about communism and socialism and fascism and Mankind United and all different things, which you don't get today. The atmosphere, they shut that down. They had that at that time. I want to divert a little, because at a certain time in the United States history, the industrial workers of the world, the Wobblies at that time, got the labor unions together, got the blacks together, which was unheard of, all in one direction, you know, one working entity. They got the women together. They accepted all nationalities, and they were a force to be reckoned with. And they went to Roosevelt during the Depression, and they demanded money to help the suffering of the people. And they said, either you give us some money, you give us something to do, or it will be like Russia. We will throw you out. You won't have any money. So he was part of the privileged class, and he went to those and said, this is what's happening. If you don't get me some money to keep this down a little bit, we won't have money as well. So during the Depression,
they threw him a bone big enough to keep them satisfied, but not... but they could still keep doing their agenda.
They had They started large dam projects and other projects. They gave them compensation. They gave them funding for unemployment. They had camps that people could go to when they were thrown out of their farms and their houses. And they established many different camps, working camps that they put sociologists ahead of and different things. They kept them busy. And some people said that was the best time of their lives. When they went to these camps, they grew their own food. They planted trees in the forest. You know, they gave them something to do. And they appeased them. They didn't realize. They didn't have enough. They didn't know what was going on structurally in the system. They didn't know that this is just continuing the system. But it wasn't that that brought them out of the depression. It was the war that started, that got them out of the depression. So anyway, going back to Jacques, he listened to people talking about communism, socialism, free enterprise system, and he found, and technocracy at the time grew, and he found none of them sufficient. And so he devoted the rest of his life to designing a system that would work using the best of science and technology applied to the system to benefit everyone, not to just benefit a few. You know, as long as you have few nations controlling most of the Earth's resources, you will continue to have the problems that we have today. So essentially, the Venus Project advocates that all the Earth's resources have to become the common heritage of all the Earth's people, and that we run things not by opinions or politicians or those who have money, it can buy services and buy their way into places of opinion, of control, that it has to be run by the methods of science, not scientists. As I mentioned, they believe in nationalism. They can be used to make anything that is destructive as well. So it's really has to be run by the methods of science to check things out, to see if they work under certain criteria where we don't pollute the air, that is for the well-being of people and the protection of the environment.
So it has to be a humanist system? Mm-hmm. See, what happens though, like in socialism or communism, it ends up being where the system, the benefit of the whole, ends up really oppressing certain groups of people. How do you keep that from happening?
Well, this is geared toward not an established system, but an emergent system. We understand that if everybody, you know, the kids today, what is it for them to do? They have football and baseball fields, which make them aggressive, prime them for war. And there's no chemistry areas that kids can go to after school. There's no photography areas. There's no constructive areas that they can go to learn things and continue education and do things. I just want to divert a little bit here.
Like Sparta. We're a military culture right now.
Yes, totally. Half of our budget goes to that. Over $600 billion and more and rising. But anyway, an experiment they did in Iceland, I think it was, you know, they had a tremendous drug rate and alcohol rate with kids. So they looked into it and they found that the kids that didn't do that, they had more diverse options to learn things and do things. So they set up things for kids after school, and they found that that the kids become interested in learning and doing things and their mind is occupied, then they don't need drugs. We don't need drugs when people have access to goods and services and education. You know, this is not like socialism. This system that we talk about, and let me go back. So as long as you have kids shooting up drugs and going nowhere, the system pays for it at the end with jails, with bars on your windows, with lawyers and you know, the whole prison complex, which the kids don't come out any smarter. They become smarter for doing what they call criminal acts. But
they get trained to do that, right?
Yes.
Just like a poor social, a child welfare system trains them to be criminals. Our prison system trains trains people to become lifetime criminals.
You're right.
Unfortunately.
That's right. And of course, that what they don't have any, they can't get jobs, they can't vote, they can't get loans, they can't, they're really ostracized in society. They don't even have a chance. Mm-hmm. They made sure of that. So recidivism rate is tremendous. So it's very easy to show that if you give kids things to do that are interesting, that they would rather not drug themselves out, but do other things. So the Venus Project advocates that you make education available to everybody. You give, and without money, then you set up things where kids become interested in learning. They can participate in anything. They go around and see how the system works. We understand today how to make kids creative and inventive. If you reinforce certain things and you create a hunger for them to want to learn, and sometimes people think, well, I gave my kids all the best toys to learn this or that, and I'm a mathematician and they want to become a ballerina. So, but they don't understand how to set up the environment so they can learn. And they're not put down, and they're encouraged and reinforced in certain times, so they want to learn. And I have all sorts of examples of that because Jacques tested that with his own kids. So if you create an environment that nurtures that in children, and you create an environment where whatever people design goes right back into society to make your life better. You don't have to have money. You don't have to have patents. You don't have to have advertising. You don't have money to produce in mass production. You don't have to have money to have lawyers. But you're encouraged to contribute. And you're without money, you don't have superfluous, wasteful professions that do nothing, that are just vultures after one another. In this system, that's what we are. We are vultures. When you get a toothache, you get a few thousand bucks from somebody fixing that. If you bump your car, somebody else makes a few thousand bucks off of your misery. None of that is needed when you make goods and services available so anybody can go in and check out anything they want, just like the public library. But you might have a library on one of the access, they're access centers. You can go in. You might have a camera center in another access center. You might have musical instruments. You might have art materials in the other, and people can teach you how to use them. And when kids come in, they teach you certain things to be able to use a better camera, and they go take pictures. You teach them how to about composition and lighting, and then they can get a better camera. So when you're finished, you bring the items back to the resource access center, and they're kept in key shape. And so that's how you conserve resources in that area as well. If you use them all the time, you keep them. There's nothing like that.
Well, I see this as something that is such a big paradigm shift, that creating a city and allowing people to absorb it so that they can understand the paradigm shift and then go back and then try. You almost have to funnel people through just so they can understand the new paradigm.
Well, before they even go into the city, they would have orientation classes so they understand this. But we really do think that people would want to live in this city and stay in this city. And then what they'd be doing there as well is making automated systems and research and development to make the next city better, more efficient, more economical in terms of resources to build, have a higher standard of living. The cities are all immersed in beautiful gardens. We make homes today in cities and places where you want to get away from and take a vacation. I don't know why you'd want to get away from someplace if it had all the aspects of a vacation in your living area, your living facilities, or your living environment, so anybody can take advantage of them and use them. And you don't have to go to anybody to get permission. You don't have to be subservient to anybody.
What do you do with people who just don't really feel like doing anything?
Well, I think that's derived from this culture. I think what kills incentive more than anything else is minimum wage. And, you know, they say, well, what about the lazy people? Well, you make people lazy. People who have minimum wage and have to work many jobs, they get home and they're exhausted. And they have so much stress, and it hurts their, it's been proven in many statistics that it hurts them physically as well. I won't even bother getting into that. That's kind of known.
I think that, you know, in business, they've done a lot of studies to show that people are not motivated by money. There's all sorts of other motivations. Money is the last thing that motivates people. And that's been shown in a lot of studies.
That's great. Yes, I've seen those too. And I just wanted to give an example in terms of being lazy, or they say that the lazy people, you're not born lazy. For instance, if you have a kid and you say, get in here and clean up the cellar, and they clean up the cellar, and you don't pat them on the back, and then you say, okay, now sweep up the leaves out there and mow the lawn, and they do that. But they don't come, the father doesn't come over and say, that was a wonderful job. Thank you very much. That really helps us, the family. What would you like? Would you like to go for ice cream, or would you like to have a movie, go to a movie? If they're not reinforced for every bit of behavior that is constructive, then when they see the father come out, they will hide behind a tree, and the father will say, get over here, you lazy bastard. Come and you know, clean the toilet. So you make people lazy.
Well, and part of our problem is going towards a new system is that we have a whole bunch of people like that who haven't been raised well, who are very dysfunctional, who are hurting in so many ways. Yeah. So it's a challenge to get to anything that is, I mean, we're just not functional now, even in our, I mean, you say the system's, everybody, a lot of people say the system is screwed up, but unless we fix a lot of underlying foundational issues, no matter where we put these people, I'm not sure if they'll be functional.
You're right. And it has to be an educational process too, and enable them, take them in little by little, and have other people around that have a greater understanding of what's happening and introduce them to new things. You know, people don't steal when things are available. So, and it eliminates envy and greed and so, but the first city would have to house those who can as quickly as possible perpetuate this system.
Who can get it right away so that you can show others that it works. So you got to get the real mentally healthy people and that can be put into an environment like this so that other people can see the paradigm change and live and breathe it. Whereas if you just put anybody in there, it'll end up proving it won't work.
But it would be people who would be working toward this, making movies, videos, making the next system better, making products that would help the system and to help people on the outside. So, and they would be, and I did want to mention, I never got to that, but these people who are working on things to improve your standard of living, and when it goes right back into society, the products they make, and other things that they introduce to you, you're happy to see people. They're not out to get you. They're not out there saying, well, have I got just the product for you? You know? So they understand that the more educated the children are and the people are, the safer your life is. It's kind of functional selfishness, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do understand. So how can people learn more about this? Venusproject.com?
Yes, exactly that. We have lots of free material. Check out on the bottom our YouTube channel. And check out Get Involved. We're constantly putting new things there. Sign up for our newsletter so you can learn about what's new and what we're putting out there. We have many different teams that volunteer all over the world. We have a 2-year educational course. We have supporters, TVP, the Venus Project Support, which is an independent group, but they're kind of an activist group or a supporters group that set up exhibitions, do showings, do town meetings, do exhibits on the Venus Project's work. any way they can. They go to festivals and introduce the Venus Project. We also have the social media team. We have the graphics team that turns out wonderful materials. You can go on our website. On the bottom of the website, it's shareable materials. They're always putting things out. We have the transcription team. We have the translation team. Linguistics teams, international.
And people can join any of those groups to help out.
Yes, and we do have a little orientation course, about 10 hours, so that we have people go through before they join, so they learn about what this is more so there's no misunderstanding, so they understand whether this is, in fact, the group, you know, the organization that they would like to work toward. So, and then they can better work with other people, because a lot of the material we show is about semantics, how to communicate with other people, the methods that scientists used. You know, there's no ambiguity, and there's no argument in science. They put it to test to find out what works, and it eliminates a lot of problems and bickering. So people learn.
How do you fund this? Now we're back to our money problem. How are you getting donations or what?
We get donations, not enough to really fund the center that we have here. We are going to go for grants on phase two, because that's going to be very costly, and we're going to be going towards independent people. We have a nonprofit organization as well. Well, it's independent from the Venus Project, but we will be working with it, and so people can contribute to what I see as a real way out of our problems, a real direction to work toward to surpass the problems that we have today and initiate it into society. So phase two of this larger center and research and development and museum and theme park of the future, which is all educational as well, we're not looking for investors, because we're not looking for them to make money off of what we're doing. We're looking for people who understand and they want to invest in a sustainable future for themselves and then for their children and for their grandchildren. So if they don't understand that, they may not invest. But we encourage you to look at thevenusproject.com. It's quite extensive. There's so much more on our YouTube channel, on our books. We have free ebooks. We do have a store that we sell, because you asked how do we sustain this. Mm-hmm. We have to sell some of our products in order to sustain this, because the phone company doesn't come along and say, you're doing wonderful social work. You don't need to pay your bill.
You need money.
Taxes,
you just do, right?
We still live in the monetary system. In the beginning, it was Jacques and myself that funded this whole thing, and through outside jobs. But now the tours help us fund the project as well. We do charge for that. We do give them a lot of materials to go home with so they can further study. So
good value, but you still make money on it because you have to.
For some aspects, we do. We're trapped within the monetary system.
Yes, you are. Yep. Well, yes. Thank you so much for joining us on the program and giving us a different paradigm and perspective on how we can create a better world, because I think that's where people are grappling with right now. It's becoming more and more critical that we start rethinking what we're doing.
Yes, and they're beginning to understand that the system doesn't work, and they're saying it's really, we've come to a fascistic state, but they don't know what to do. They don't offer anything else. So, and as I said, this was a whole lifetime of Jacques working on this, and many different disciplines that he brought together to present this. And I think we're lucky that he did the work. And now we ask people to learn about it. If they identify with it, please join us.
Well, thank you so much.
I really appreciate this opportunity. It's been wonderful. Thank you.
That's all we have for today, folks. Thank you very much for listening. And I want to make a shout out to my Patreons. Thank you so much for supporting the program. I really appreciate it. And I really value you and everything you do to help pay the expenses of this show. And for those of you that are getting something out of the material that I'm doing, please consider supporting the program. It's at patreon.com, Sarah Westall. And if you can't afford it, then don't support it. That's not what it's about. It's for people that can support it to please help. And if you want to see my episodes, I have episodes going back a couple years. So the YouTube only has through December and then some other ones I put up there. But I have a lot of other ones up there on sarahwestall.com in audio form. I also have some really good ones with the intelligence agent from Israel. I didn't put it up on YouTube, and I have some other really good ones as well. So go there and listen to things as well. It's on over 100 different digital channels. So again, I want to thank you for supporting me and listening to the show, and have an amazing day.